Hey, good morning, Chris.
Hello.
It's funny, when I told my students on Thursday and Friday that there was no school on Monday, they were pissed. Like, what do you mean there's no school on Monday? I'm like, it's a holiday. And they're like, what? Well, can we come to the Google Classroom? You can come to the Google Classroom, but there won't be a meeting link, and I sure certainly won't be here. They're like, okay.
Mice, I always mention it now to my students. Can I do a quick story?
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's a quick story. So
It's
I'm
not going to
prob
be, but I'm looking forward to it.
I'm probably thanks, appreciate the support. I'm in
I'm just
my
being honest with you.
I know, to be honest, I appreciate you too. So it was maybe my first or second year of teaching, and we were coming up on a PD day. And I sort of gave it, I really didn't, it, I can, I will say, to be honest here, I will say that in my
My
first couple years of teaching, I don't know if I really cared as much about the students as I did about my own survival. And I made a lot of decisions to try to get by in my days. And this wasn't intentional, and I don't care for kids. I just found I didn't have the capacity to extend my caring that far. So I was very practical, hyper strategic, really trying to be really technical and just kind of paying attention to my practice in a way that it probably would have been good if I had spent just a little bit more time also thinking about my students. But I didn't. I kind of went through, there was a lot of going through the motions just to get through my day. And one of the things that happened as a result, and I think it's again, not because I didn't care about kids. I didn't care as much about kids as I did like getting through the curriculum. Like there were a whole bunch of stuff that I focused on caring about more. We're coming up to this PA day, and up to that point, I had mentioned a couple times that this PA day was coming down the pipe. Posted it on the board, and didn't make a like I had the chalk agenda for the week or whatever, but didn't make a lot of really I didn't make any singular check-ins with anybody. It was a broadcast. I broadcasted that this thing was coming down the pipe, and that's it. I just that was really all there was to it. I just broadcast and said, here's what's going to happen. There were two students in my class that were just beginning their journey of learning English. I don't know what their I don't remember now what their sort of status in their English language learning was, but I was aware of the supports that they were receiving and some of the steps that I was taking, despite the fact I really didn't, again, didn't have a real clear clue on how to do that particular work, but was doing it the best that I could. So, I didn't check in with them frequently and didn't check in with them well to sort of ensure that certain pivots. And I think it, now that I'm thinking back, this was probably like one of the when it was like one of the first PD days or PA days of the semester. So, PD day arrives, PA day arrives, and I'm whether all the teachers are sort of like a herd walking through the main foyer, going into the library, and I can see my two students standing in the front foyer, and they sort of wave and they call me over, and we're talking. They're like, "What's going on? Like, we're like, what's up with school today?" And at that point, I'm like, "There's no school today. Like, it's a PA day." And they had been dropped off by their family, so they didn't have, and not everybody had cell phones. So then I had to bring them in the office, and then they called their family, and then there was the discussion around their family wasn't one of the individuals was with a host family, so their family was somewhere else in the world, and they were living with a family here. These two had become friends, and I had to play a part in making arrangements for someone to come and pick them up, and so. As PA days flow out, you're sort of in and out of whatever main space that you're meeting in. And a couple of times we walk out, they're still sitting in the front foyer. So they were there until 12 noon, waiting to be picked up. And I mean, I never So the lesson learned in, it's funny, I think many teachers might have this moment. We'll sort of walk away from these lessons that we learn about our practice. And, you know, for me, this particular lesson learned, I don't know if I have spent enough time trying to learn what it felt like from that kid's perspective to have had that, you know, come to school and there's no school. And even as I talk about it now, when I talk about the lesson learned, I center it entirely from my perspective. So I'm about to give a pedagogical switch up as opposed to an emotional acknowledgement that I really kind of like messed with these kids to a degree. Here's my pedagogical switch up. Ever since then, I've made sure to check in with students that I know might need that reminder so that they're not showing up on the, you know, a PA day or a holiday. And there's always one or two that are just, they're not really paying attention. The lesson learned in this, I guess, as I'm sort of teasing it apart now, is also how do I make sure that individuals, how do you pay attention? I should have paid more attention to their emotional state at the time too, which I know I didn't. I hustled them into the office. We made the phone calls. I sat with them for a little bit. I'm like, okay, yo, peace. I got to go to my PA day. Thinking back, I probably should have, I think to your moment, you shared the story about sitting down with that little dude in the hallway that's crying. Now that's a highly visible cueing system. Person is upset. I'm going to hunker down for a second. I'll have a conversation. Super simple, super sweet, super accessible, right? And you can push off your day. You can push off your day and kind of, and say, or you're texting like, yo, colleague, can you take care of this thing? Or someone walks past and they're like, hey, can you go check in on my class? Like you have the tools to kind of push off your day to deal with that moment. As a new teacher, I had no concept of being a push off my day. Cause really thinking back, I should have went and just spoke to my administrator and said, look, I'm going to just sit out here with these two kids for a little bit. I don't know if they're freaking out, but they don't have school today. They don't have school and they're waiting in the front. And now their guardians, their homestay parents are having to come and pick them up. I don't know how that's going to be received. Like if the homestay parents are going to be frustrated or upset. I said, you know, I should have spent the time. Because my lesson learned right away was, I got to remind kids more often. I was like, good for me. I've learned from this moment. But what I didn't do is I didn't connect the moment. I didn't connect well, thinking back. So really long story. Long story longer. When we talk about reminding the students about upcoming holidays, I don't stop. And they laugh at me. They're like, Clough, we know. I'm like, I know you know, but I also know somebody in here doesn't know. Anybody that steps up and tells me typically says, we know. I'm not talking to them. and I've gotten better at figuring out the students in the class that might be looking at the agenda on the wall or might be getting the emails or might hear my voice in class or might see the Google chat or might see the closed captions or might see one of my videos. Or might see one of my email blasts. What am I up to, 7 now? Mites. And 7 ways of communication still will not catch that one kid that didn't know that Monday was a holiday. So, lesson learned.
I hear you 100%. More so in the school I currently work at than any other time in my career. Because of the language barrier, because of it, it's not just the language. When you think of anybody learning something new and then dropping them into an environment with all kinds of stimulation, it can be overwhelming. And so as they've got 100 things coming at them from 100 different directions, you know, my one, hey kids, there's no school on Monday, might not even, you know, hit their
doesn't armor. Even wash. It no. Doesn't even wash.
It does. Yeah. It's like, doesn't register at all.
Nope.
So I say it. It's hilarious. I say it all day. different times to different people.
Good for you.
Well, good for me. I don't know. Like, as I say it to you, I can feel the exhaustion as it's like, you know, right before last recess, I'll call, hey, you. They turn on their mics. They're like, yeah. I'm like, there's no school Monday. They're like, we know, you told us already. And I'm like, okay. But it's like, that's what I do all day. You. You know you're coming to see me at this time, right? Yeah. You. What time are these guys coming to see me at? Like, it's a back and forth all day. And I've never had to do it the way I do it at the school that I'm currently working at. But here's the thing. Somebody will still show up. I will still get an email on Monday saying, where's the link to our meet?
Yep.
It will still happen, even though I set it for 2 days throughout both days.
It's equal parts training. The kids are trained. They're trained, as it is connection. Because I've had other kids, what was it, over the April break, that said, Clough, can we still have our TED Ed club meeting on the April break? Can we still have the spoken word meeting on the break? Is the homework club going to run on the break? And that's connection. That's more connection, right? That's community. And you're able to measure that, because one of the kids that's saying these words, they never do any homework in the homework club. They're actually in the home. So here's the thing. They're in the homework club, they're in the TED Ed club, and they're in the spoken word club. Three different sort of groups that I'm running. They don't do anything in either one of the threes, but they show up on time and they stay late. Right? So at some point you're realizing, like, that's about the connection to the group. It's about having a space that you just kind of want to be in that. And I'm not pushing for it. I push every once. I try. And so with the homework club is kind of come as you are. It's drop in whatever support you want. I'm actually more of a coach in the spoken word in the TED Ed clubs, because I want to push them a little bit. It's the same. I kind of go, I can drop into the ease of just let's all exist together, except for that one little part that I think to myself at the one of the fundamentals is community. One of the fundamentals I think in the spoken word is, can I push your creativity? So I still try and do that. Can I get you to think differently about poetry and sort of performance? And then the TED Ed club is, can I get you to think differently about doing presentations and organizing an argument and sort of speaking critically about something? What's really interesting is that when I can't go directly at TED, because TED provides curriculum and the spoken word I've been doing a while, like there's a format there. Often with TED, the way that I get them to structurally understand different presentations is not really focusing on the TED Ed part. I'll include different ways to do presentations. And the same thing with the spoken word, not spending a lot of time actually focusing on the spoken word. It's about performance and how performance can exist in different spaces. So I still push the coaching buttons in both of those spaces, but really there's a whole lot of hanging out that we're doing. Like,
it's funny you say that. It makes perfect sense. And I love to hear that it still happens in high school. At the end of my school day, I have the synchronous minutes that I'm supposed to have, 2:25, I make sure I have every day. And then at the end of the day, I've built in the asynchronous time for my students. And 95% of the time, I will have a meet open and ready for anyone who wants to come in to finish up work or start something new, whatever, right? It's kind of like, come and I'm here to support you. And sometimes I tell kids, you are coming today at the asynchronous time because you've done something that needs to be dealt with, and that's when I'm going to deal with it. So there are a couple of kids that come in every time it's open, and like you said, they're just there. They don't do anything. And the other day, the last 2 days of this week, I used the asynchronous time as a Minecraft experimenting, learning, playing time. So I said to the kids, come on in if you want to do Minecraft, and we're going to try some things. And the other kids are like, well, what if I want to do my math? Well, you can come. Come, I'll still help you with your math, but you have to know that my main focus, I want to do some Minecraft. I want to experiment. And we can learn, we can do math with Minecraft. Everybody knows that. So we can play with it or whatever. So this one student kept causing difficulties. And I kept saying, listen, you don't need to turn on your mic and argue with someone while I'm troubleshooting seven different things with the Minecraft. That's not called for. This isn't the purpose of this meeting time. And the whole time I'm thinking, I know that they just want to be here. They just want to be with others. They want to feel like they're included. They want to feel like they're worthy of the space. And so I'm like, hey, I want you to be here, but I need you to behave. I need you to comply with certain things. And they just wouldn't do it. So finally I said, listen, school day is going to end in 15 minutes. Do you really need the phone ringing at your house in 15 minutes with me calling to say that, like, you're not being a good person? Do you need that? Do you need me to remove you from this Google Meet that I know you want to? I didn't say this, but I know that they want to be there. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, you're going to push me so hard that I'm going to push you out? Really? So then it's silence and they're like, oh man, Mr. C's pissed and we're just trying to do Minecraft. And I'm like, I'm not pissed. I'm just, you see the chaos and yet you engage rather than step back. And I get it, man. I've got those kids. They come in every day and they're just there because they want to be there. They want to be somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm starting
to want to be seen. So yes. That's isn't that like, that's a powerful part to this, right? I was walking through my house the other morning, just sort of getting set up. My kids' school starts before I have to start. So I get the chance to kind of walk through, look at them in their two little islands of learning. One's in the dining room. One's kind of like near the TV room. And so my son's class, grade five, almost all the cameras are up and they're all vying for like the hello, hello. Like they're all sort of talking and chatting and, then, you know, I go around the corner and my daughter's class, nothing. Grade seven, nothing. And we were talking about it as a family at lunchtime. We kind of meet at lunchtime and I was remarking about how this is riffing a little bit on that. There was that spoken word piece that Trevor Muir pushed out called Noise. I encourage anyone. I think I've seen it pop up a few different places. I don't know if, hey, are we getting any comments in the chat at all?
We are not getting any comments in the chat. It'd be great if we did though.
Yeah. So I'm going to shout out Aldo. I know Aldo's out there. Cause I was just looking on Twitter and he's listening in out there. I think Aldo, if you're out there, drop us a message. But I think I saw Aldo resharing in, one of our chat spaces, the Noise video and people talking about how it kind of, it's filling something in them. It's filling their buckets a little bit. Right.
Right.
But I was talking to the kids. I said, look, it's really fascinating how I will tell you in high school, so few of the students open up their cameras, right? There's a lot of reasons, a lot of reasons. Now, this is just my experience and other teachers, they're having more classes open their cameras, full audio. There's many different versions of it. My experience right now, the kids are not opening up their cameras. There's a few that are. They never stay up for long. But they kind of use it a little bit more strategically, as in they'll open up their camera and then they'll kind of show Clough, is this right? Is this correct? Am I on the right track? And then boom, it goes off. It's just like it's clipped like that. They're in and out, right? I have to expect them every time the camera to come up for it to be like this. Camera comes up, they're like kind of looking around. They're like, okay, Clough, is this right? Like they're checking their six just to make sure it's okay. Yeah, I know Alder was out there. The Noise video is fire. It's good stuff. So I was talking to my kids. I said, I like that I can speak to the high school context with my two younger kids because I've written about this in the past that I get to see some of the things that I've always observed about the challenges of building community in a high school environment. I haven't observed the challenges before in elementary, but I've walked through the halls of elementary, and the palpable energy of community in elementary is very different than secondary. Very, very different. In high school, it tends to be a little bit more stolid, maybe a little bit more compartmentalized. It's just in the classrooms. Like walking through an elementary school, I think even if there's doors, elementary schools are generally loud. Between the bells, high schools are loud. But you'll walk through the hallways and it's like quiet, like you're not hearing much of anything. It can be quite unnerving, right? Like if you're in each other's spaces to be able to visit, you might open a door and it's like, right? You hear the door, but the door closes like, it's very, very quiet. So talking to my kids about how people change and they go from that energy to it, like the unbridled hallway energy, to the compartmentalized, this is the energy, this is how we carry ourselves as young adults, right? Is really kind of mind-blowing. So I'll go back to my original point here about being seen, is that it's to participate in a community and to not be noticed is incredibly hurtful. Like, I think it's incredibly hurtful, whether we have the words to actually articulate it, to sort of know that we're feeling othered, to sort of be in the room and not be noticed. It flows over into digital spaces. And for all the freneticism of an elementary school that can, I just, you know, for me, I'm wearing my sound canceling headphones just so I can sort of at least track my own movement through it. That is the sound of community. That really it is. Open, share, loud, slightly filterless, bouncing back and forth, bouncing off walls, emotionality, kind of like just the color and shape of emotionality. And it's really, it's something happens in the transition into high school where the being noticed becomes less welcoming. But I've had some really, my typical teaching style is, I mean, I was an early adopter of dumping the teacher's desk. Like typically the teacher's desk in my classrooms, and if I'm in the physical space, are pushed against the wall and I'm using it to sort of like put my coffee cup on. I'm not generally sitting down at it. And I could just as easily walk to the back of the classroom and kind of lean or sit on a shelf and teach as I could walk to the, you know, north side, east side, west side, whatever. I'm all over the classroom. What I love is those moments where you're able to sort of reasonably call out a student and feel in that moment, we're talking digital now, that the student, sometimes even without words, but it comes up in the chat, or maybe they open their camera just once quickly. I think the cost of being noticed can be a little bit embarrassing, but I think the benefit of being noticed, I think embarrassment can be harnessed into something positive. So being seen in these clubs, even if you're not producing content, imagine in a day you attend three courses, you're a part of four clubs and four courses in the day. So we'll just kind of put those two things parallel. Your whole day you spend in those four courses feeling the demands of having to produce something and the obligation of showing up, because that's the law. And then you go to those four clubs and you start to realize you're just kind of showing up with them. You don't have to go, but you show up, but you're able to just exist, participate a little bit, be noticed a little bit, connect a little bit, maybe even learn a little bit, who knows? And I try to imagine what that ease of existence feels like. I try to I try to appreciate and really taste the benefits for a kid to be able to just be in that space. And it really tempers the whole, like, I've had to figure out, I'll say it flat out, I hang my own kids out at the ends of some of these things, because I tend to do tight and short club meetings, knowing that there's going to be some unraveling at the end. It's going to take a little bit longer. And then I'll say, sorry, Fred, I got to go. I got to go make dinner for my family. So I'll throw in my obligation, my personal obligation to my family, just, and I'll hang my kids. They're screaming upstairs. I gotta go make dinner. Otherwise they're going to eat the cat. Like I'll throw something, then I'll have to leave. But again, the willingness, I have students that are chronically late for class and never late for clubs. Yeah.
Dude, you said so much there. You're pushing me in a number of different directions. So I want to respond by saying that this idea, this shift in wanting to be seen, wanting to be heard from elementary to secondary is unbelievably wild in this digital world. And I see the same thing. You know, my one son's in grade 5, cameras are on, people are going back and forth. Then I look at my son in grade 9 and his camera's off. The only thing you can see on the screen, the only thing you can hear is the teacher talking. And my son looks like a zombie because he starts school at 8:10 in the morning. And it's real, right? Like the whole thing.
Like the zombie is real.
The zombie is real. When I look at my grade 5 son, you know, I signal him, I cue him physically before I talk to him because I don't know if his camera's on and his mic.
Yeah, we do the same thing.
But my grade 9 son, I can open his door and say, "Yo, Ben, you got to do that. I know the camera's off. I know the mic's off, right?" So that I'm living that. I see that. And so I wanted to say that piece there. The other piece I wanted to say was yesterday, I'm finishing up my planning. Oh, I want to talk about the girls who game and their camera and microphone etiquette in the club. And I want to talk about something that happened with one of my students the other day. So the other day, I'm in my planning time. I'm getting ready to start teaching again. And I get a message from my planning time teacher saying, "I just had this issue with so-and-so. I believe he's been lying to me about such and such, because when I called him on it, when I said to him, 'Turn on your camera,' he wouldn't do it right away because he was probably situated in a place where he shouldn't have been. And then when he did turn on his camera, he said something about he was helping his mother with something. So then the teacher said, 'Go, okay, get your mom. I want to talk to her.' And he was like, 'What?" And she's like, 'Get your mom. I want to tell your mom how I appreciate that you're all at home, but when she asks you to help her with something, it gets in the way of your work, and like, it's going to bring you down. So mom should know that.' All of a sudden he's like, that's not what happened." And she's like, "Oh dude, that's not cool that you bring your mom into this lie and whatever." So she messaged me this. So then I start up class with them. And so the same kids always have their cameras on. Then there's a group that never have them on. Then there's a group where it comes on, comes off. So I call out the student. I'm like, "So-and-so." He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Are you here?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Turn on your camera." And it is rare for me to tell a kid, "Turn on your camera," because I'm trying to be respectful of why they might have it off. "So turn on your camera." He turns it on. I said, "Unless you need a drink or you're going to the bathroom, your camera's staying on. You're staying right where you are." And in his background was like, you know, like a bookshelf and stuff. Like I was like, "I know what you just did to the planning time teacher. We're not doing that now. You're going to stay there and you're going to work your tail off and you're going to show me that then I can reset and then tell you, okay, I can trust you again. Turn your camera off." And because I know what they're doing when the cameras are off. They're playing video games. They're doing all kinds of stuff. I know. I've seen it, right? So I did that. That was interesting. It was like, no, you're going to leave your camera on whether you like it or not, because now you're positioned to learn, you're ready to learn, and you're not going anywhere. You already used the mom thing, planning time teacher caught you in that lie. We're not going there for the next 40 minutes. And he obliged. There was no, I was like, it's one of those things where if there's pushback, I'm aware, right? I'm aware and I'm listening and I'm seeing, is this going to cause more damage than I believe it will? There was no pushback. So he was in a place where I've been many times where you know what you did was wrong and it's time to pull up your socks and start doing the right thing, right? I get that. There's a time and place for that too. Girls Who Game. So with the Girls Who Game, we meet with them twice a week officially. And then the other coach and I, we offer them other times in the day where they can meet, a place where they can meet and we can supervise them while they work. But we don't necessarily interact with them or whatever. So I opened up two of those in the last 2 weeks and my camera's on. And I'm teaching my students on one computer and on the other computer are the Girls Who Game. And so they might not be able to hear me all the time because I've got that mic muted, but my camera's on. I'm working, right? Well, it's asynchronous time. So I'm supporting kids here and I'm supporting kids here. And after two times with them, I emailed their teacher, who's the other coach. And I said, I don't know if like this is a good use of time. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, they don't answer any of my questions. They don't say anything to me. I don't hear them talking. I'm like, I think it's a waste of time. She goes, when they're with me, they won't stop talking. I said, okay, can you check in with them? And this is like, I said to my coach partner, I said, you got to help me here. I don't know these girls. I don't teach them. I teach grade three. So it's like, I'm a clown all day. Remind me what it's like to teach grade seven. Remind me of what this group of girls are like. What's the profile? Remind me. Cause either they're not comfortable with me. That's not good. I'm their coach. So what am I doing wrong? You know, what have I done to not have them trust, or what can I do? So she said, I'll talk to them. So she came back and said, you know what, Roland, they told me, they said, you've done nothing wrong, but your camera's on. They feel like they're being watched. I said, oh, so are you telling me like if I just turn my camera off and mute my mic and like I can supervise them, I can see that they're there communicating with each other, I can hear them? And she's like, yeah, try that. They said there's no problem. They like you. You're a good coach. They don't have any issues with you. I said, okay. So then the next time we went in, I turned my camera off and all of a sudden they just started talking and they wouldn't stop talking. Like I'd never seen this from them before. And I've been working with them since February. And then I emailed the other coach. I'm like, oh my God, you're right. Like they wouldn't stop. And then 3:45 came and I said, okay, girls, 3:45 has come. Ding, ding, the bell's rung, the day's over. I let my class go and I said, so you should figure out what you're going to do now. I don't just want to hang up on you and leave you hanging. Talk to each other, figure out how you want to proceed on your time. And I got up and I started tidying up my desk. And then next thing you know, it's 4:00. They're still talking. They're still working. So I turn on my camera. I'm like, girls, they stop. I'm like, it's time to go. Like Mr. C's going to go and be with his family and talk about dinner and start cooking and stuff. And I don't like, it's my day's over and your day's over with me. They're like, okay. But it's just these little tweaks, and understanding a group of people goes a long way. And I'm going to toot my own horn here. I'm really proud of myself that before I took a strip off this one kid, I was very aware that this student is in the room, maybe feeling like they don't have a role to play. And I'm aware. And so then I try to buffer, right? I try to give them a role. I remind them of expectations. I want them with us, whether they're participating or not. I want them to feel safe somewhere. But there's the big but, is you're not going to raise hell in here. Like you're not, I get all that. I'm going to try to support you in all those ways, but there's a fine line. You're not going to come in and disrupt. And the student was kept disrupting. So the student had to leave. And I do feel, I feel something about that, but I also feel for the other kids in the room who are all trying to accomplish something, and were trying to get something done. Now, since that was Thursday, I did talk to the student on Friday, and I basically said, I'm here to support, I'm here to help, I'm here to welcome, but you're not going to railroad anything I'm supervising. It's just not going to happen. And I don't care if you're this kid or that kid. Every kid's going to get the same message. I'm the teacher. I'm responsible. I'm in charge. These are my non-negotiables. You choose whether you are going to participate or not. I said, if you choose to, you know, play ball, then sky's the limit. You can come in. You can do art if you want during that. You can do whatever you want. You can be here. I will see you and I will hear you and I will talk to you. But you're not going to get in the way of other people's stuff. Just like I would not allow other people to get in the way of what you're doing. And they're like, yeah, no, I get it. I'm sorry. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. You're in grade three. You're going to mess up. I get that. Right. Like, so it's over now. Let's move forward. And I'll remind you of this if it comes up again. So all those things you said, you know, high school is the same thing in elementary, right? So Aldo's here. It's good to have you, Aldo. Tyler Keefe is here from Idaho. Good to have you, Tyler. You know, Aldo was saying that the palpable energy of the community is something he loves. You know, Aldo also commented that the sheer power of reflection is inspiring. Being seen and the obligation of showing up, a different kind of noise. 100%, it's a different kind of noise. And then Tyler said that his elementary school was quite fairly quiet until Tuesday when the masks were lifted. And now it finally feels like a community again and that it's loud. And as Tyler says that, you know, I think to myself, with the masks on, it has been completely different. Like we don't sing. There's no singing in elementary school where I'm at. There's no singing. There's no like extraneous talk. Like if yeah. I'm doing something and I hear extraneous talk, I look over like, and I do this thing. I'm like, dude, it's COVID. And that's what I just say, dude or dudette, it's COVID. And they're like, oh yeah. And then, you know, it's like, it's just a different vibe. It has to be because they're telling us what will keep us safe. And when they take their masks off to eat, I remind them. I said, listen, I know you want to talk, but talking while eating is going to defeat the purpose of like the masks all day. So let's not do that. Let's not force ourselves to be here and wear these masks and then in 10 minutes ruin it kind of thing. Like, no. We're not doing that. It's hard, man. It's hard to tell grade threes to stop talking. And I would say, I don't, you know, I know people have gotten themselves in trouble for the way that they told kids to stop talking. What I say is, you're going to talk outside 100%. You're supposed to be eating. And in my career, one of my pet peeves has been parents calling me and saying, why don't you give my child enough time to eat? And I'm like, whoa, your child gets a ton of time to eat. Your child just decides that your child would rather be talking than eating. And then they go home and do they tell their parents that they spent their whole lunch hour talking? No. They just say, oh, I don't know what happened. You know? So, Tyler, it's going to be whacked when those masks come off. It's going to be whacked. And dude, when I get my carpet back, when I like as an elementary primary teacher, that carpet is my bread and butter. You know, I sit on that carpet with the kids and read to them and I group them on the carpet and I get them to do their mathematics on the carpet and their science on the carpet. Like the carpet was the place to be. And now the carpet is gone. And what's replaced it? Desks, for goodness sake. Desks. My room is a sea of desks. My room looks like a grade 12 academic English class. It's not supposed to look that way. And it's not supposed to be as quiet as it is in my room. And I'm not supposed to be sitting with a plexi shield between me and another kid. There's supposed to be a whack of kids on the floor collaborating together in real time, up close and personal. While I'm at the guided reading table with six kids surrounding me and working on their reading and being loud and asking questions and, you know, me taking a strip off a kid for, hey, you're in my face, you're spitting in my face. Like, that's old school. Now it's like, oh, you need me to come close to you? Let me put my shield on. And I've gotten to the point where that is the norm. It's just normal, right? It's just normal. I don't like it, but that's just how it is. And not being able to hear kids across the room is normal. And me hearing myself vibrate into my own ears because I have a mask and glasses and a shield, that's just normal now. So when you know, somebody says to me, are we going back to school for the end of June? I say, I don't want to. And they look at me like I'm crazy. And they're like, why? And I'm like, because I don't have to wear a mask or a shield here. I can actually look at kids and I can kind of get close with the camera and joke around or whatever. I know we're not physically present together, but I don't have to wear all that gear and I don't have to tell them to be quiet at lunchtime. And when we come together for our Minecraft meetings and they can all talk like they would in the classroom, I don't have to say, stop talking. It's COVID. We can't have this happening right now in this way. That's why I prefer to be here. Because when we go back to school, all that talking stops. And we're not staying in for recess to do Minecraft because I've lost my mind and I need a break. I need to walk around the school. I need to get outside and take my mask off. Right? Like, things shift. I'm with you, TK. Don't let it be normal. Things will change. You're right. Things will change. One day I won't. And they won't have to wear a mask anymore in the building. And we can eat lunch together and we can talk and we can sing again. And trust me, I'm not big on singing. I'm not. But to hear them sing O Canada again together with me is going to be, dude, I think I might actually tear up. To like stand with my class and sing O Canada. We haven't done that all year. And in religion celebrations, which we do, because we're faith-based, there's no singing. That's part of our faith, is to sing. There's no singing. Aldo says true words. Thank you, Aldo. I appreciate that. So, Clough, I think we went in a direction that we weren't planning on going in, which is fine. We don't normally have a plan for the Decoded podcast. We come in and we do our thing. But you've started doing something recently that I want to talk about. Sometimes during the week you'll push out a tweet or you'll respond to a tweet and you will attach the Decoded podcast hashtag to it as a way to remind you that you might want to talk about it on the cast. Mm-hmm. Are you okay if we go there for a bit?
Do it.
Awesome. I'm gonna be selfish. I'm gonna start with something that I tweeted just the other day. I went out at lunch for a walk. Okay, I didn't get to do my morning walk because staying up late and watching hockey got in the way of waking up early one morning. So. I go out for lunch. I'm on my walk. I'm probably chatting with you. And I come up to a street where they're repaving a parking lot. And I see the ramp that goes up to the machine that they're going to back down off the ramp and use to do their work. And so I run up to it like a fool and turn on my camera to try to grab a picture of this ramp. Now, while I'm doing that, you got the construction workers all over the place that look over and they're like, this guy's getting too close to our machinery type of thing is what they're thinking, right? And they've got cones around the truck and around the machine, and I'm in their space. And they're not there. Like, I'm not physically in somebody's space, but I'm in there like, hey, why is that guy near our truck with our machines and the pylons? And I'm literally on my knees getting nice and low to get this picture. And I laugh and I tag it Decoded Podcast, because what I wanted to say about it is that it is pretty awesome and fun to put yourself in a situation like that, but be aware that you're doing something that's a little bit left field and you might get looks and you might get questions, but there's something there that you want to capture. And so I had to capture that photo with the ramp going up. And I tweeted it out, ramping up, because I was in the middle of, like, you know, a 45-minute walk, and it was hot out, and I was sweating, and I was feeling good, right? I was breathing in that air. I hadn't gone for my walk. I needed to get out and move. Decoded Podcast, baby, breaking it down, entering into spaces where you shouldn't be, and knowing you shouldn't be there, and yet not taking off, but staying in the moment and getting what you need. So that's what happened there with that one. But you had a couple of good ones. I'm going to talk about the most recent one. Does anything start on time anymore? Tell me where that came from and what made you decide that that might be something you want to touch upon today.
A general sense of waiting. This chronic sense of waiting. You go to a staff meeting and we're going to give it a few more minutes, let everyone arrive. You start your class, say, I'm going to take care of the attendance in 5 minutes. We just want everyone to, everyone to settle and everyone to arrive. You go grab your groceries and you're sort of, standing in line if you are doing the in real life shopping, or, if you're doing the online and the curbside, you're sort of waiting. And there was a sudden kind of moment that I, the Twitter sometimes is just the, screaming at the sky kind of moment where you're just like asking these questions. So Twitter is a great sounding board for that, just to sort of share out, curious states of mind. But that's where that came from. And it also kind of was adjacent to some other thinking that I was having about time and our sense of time. And I kind of played around with that with some poetry and posted that up. Was sort of in a discussion with Beth Lyons and a few people sort of me talking about starting on time, which was kind of couched in that idea that you can have an expectation of something having a time frame anymore. And then some other people kind of jumped into the actual tweet and just started talking about really the diffusion of time right now. Like, it doesn't, how we account for time is not, how we account for time right now is not the same as it was, let's say, a year and a half ago. So I think what you're saying about, kind of being a little bit cheeky and sort of taking photos in spaces that, you're getting close to a construction zone is sort of similar to some of these things. When I ask a question like that, it's similar. I think what I'm doing is I'm hoping other people will get up close to an idea that, might cause just a little bit of discomfort, but there's actually something to talk about there, right? When you sort of notice your own state of mind. So that's where that one came from. Does anything start on time anymore?
Well, it made me laugh because you and I, we rarely start our podcast on time, right? We say, okay, we'll meet at 8:30. And like, I think today I messaged you. I thought about messaging you and telling you I was going to be late. I don't remember if I did or not, but it's whack that way too, eh? And I think it's weird in the digital world because I will open my meat on time, but not everybody's there waiting, right? Kids walking in here and there, sometimes kids leaving before the end. It's like, what's going on here? You'd never do this at school, but school's different. The physical building, and there's certainly a culture within those four walls of school that are hard to nail down sometimes. They don't operate the same way digitally. And because there's a culture at home that interferes with the culture of school, right? It's those two worlds coming together.
I think that's the wrong way around.
Say, okay, step in.
I think it's the culture of school that's interfering with the culture of home.
I guess it depends on which way you're looking at it. But yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. But when I'm here ready to rock and do my job, I'm like, let's go, kidlets. Mr. C's waiting. But I hear what you're saying.
I would argue the exact same thing. Your need to have things start on time in somebody else's house would be a little bit like you texting me that when you said, you know, you sent out the text this morning, and I said, dude, I kind of messaged back, you know, just ridiculously, I'm cleaning up cat crap. If you had doubled down and said, but I'm sitting here waiting for you, I probably would have sent you photos of the poop that I was cleaning up, just to like, back off, dude, I'm having to deal with a cat issue. So I think school is much the same way. The only difference in this podcast relationship, you and I are equals. So there's no imbalance of power. You can ask, and I'm like, you know, back off, dude, right? And we'll just play and we'll be messy. However, you as the teacher, I think this is kind of critical in this. Our expectation that we should be able to impose between the bells thinking in our students' houses is a major flaw that we haven't figured out.
And I don't disagree with you. Where my pushback would be around, where's the fine line then? Because, and here's why. It has to be a fine line because you and I are both responsible for taking attendance. You mm-hmm. and I are both responsible for notifying the people in charge who's here and who's not here. So for me, I agree with you 100%. 100% I agree with you. But if we're still doing school and teachers are still expected to do things like attendance, no, not expected, it's a legal requirement. Things start to get murky, right? Like, so for me, I'm pretty good at being flexible. So like, school starts at 9:15. I won't even consider attendance. If not everybody's there, I won't even consider attendance until around 9:45, 9:50 in the morning. I won't even consider it. If everybody's there, then it's on my list of to do before 9:30. But if they're not all there, dude, I'm like Gumby, man. Flex me any way you want. But then it gets to the point where, like, I do it at 10 o'clock and someone walks in at 10:15. I'm like, I do one of these, like, okay, this isn't cool because now I'm expected to contact the school and tell the school so-and-so just walked in. That's not cool. Now I really am like Gumby, but my flex was really good half an hour ago. Now I'm not so flexible because it's like, well, when does this stop? When does this stop? Because the people above me expect me to do something for them, and the people below me expect me to do something for them. And I'm with you. Like, one day I'm sitting here, lunch, the phone rings. I pick it up. It's an automated message from my son's high school saying he was not in his morning class. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here, and my son's room is right over there, and I can see him and I can hear his teacher the whole time. So I said to him, yo, get in here. He comes in. I'm like, what happened? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, it says you were absent. He goes, Dad, the teacher was calling names. I didn't get to him in time. And then I wrote in the chat, it's Ben, I'm here. And I guess he either didn't see it or forgot, or he did the attendance. He did the attendance, but then didn't contact anybody and say, oh, Ben's here. And I'm in here dying doing that. So I just, my son's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, nothing. Go back to doing whatever you're doing. And it's one of those things where, as a dad in my home, I'm like, I don't care. Right? Like, I get, so I see your side. I 100% get, because as a dad, I was like, I don't care. I don't care. I know you were in class, and I know we'll be doing the homework tonight. So no loss type of thing. But it pisses me off. It's like, why didn't that teacher then register that my kid was there and then contact somebody so I don't get this call? Now, in high school, you get a telephone call like that. In elementary, you get a human calling your house saying, we don't know where your child is.
And we don't.
Oh,
we
no. Don't.
No, here we get a,
we yeah, get a my phone board, call from a human.
That, no, that happened twice. That actually happened twice this week, once for each of my kids. And what I get is I get an automated phone call from their school that says, you know, your child is absent from, you know, period. I don't think they say period one. I forget what they say, but they're absent right. from their morning classes. And it asks you, are you aware or not aware of this?
Oh,
interesting. And you only get one or two choices. And I said, I am not aware of this. Close it up. I go upstairs. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, and then there's always the story. One is I was on the toilet and I, you know, they sent the attendance. So then I send the email, say, please adjust the attendance. My son is in class. Late, fine, absent, not, right? Cleaning that right. up. The other, you know, the other kid says, I was there. The teacher didn't, sorry, I said, you know, I'm here, but they didn't acknowledge me back. So, and I said, okay. In both cases, I said to my children, and again, one in grade five, one in grade seven, I said, I've done my work. It's on you now to have a conversation with the teacher to remind them that you're here. So I've put it back to both of them. And then I followed up at lunch to make sure they had the conversation. So yeah, we get a synthetic voice. Okay. I got an email later in the day for my younger saying it was fixed. The kid is actually there. It was an email though, but we don't get an actual human phone call.
Okay, so you can imagine then, one of the things that has always existed in my board, as long as I've been a teacher here, is basically the admin assistant saying, yo, you messed up, and I just had to deal with an irate parent, right? So that's very real.
Because you accidentally did the wrong attendance?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, shoot, sorry. You know, so think digitally. Digitally, I'm still doing attendance, admin assistant still calling home, and is like, your kid's not in class. And then my response is, well, do you want me to just stop everything I'm doing all day long and email you and tell, like, this is the it becomes a bit of a battle, right? Teacher does their job, student walks in late. Who's it on? Well, everybody's going to argue it's the teacher's job. So then the teacher has to stop doing whatever to contact the office because you can't wait till noon. It's too late then. The calls have been made. So you do your due diligence and I try to email within a minute or two of the kid walking into the room. I'm like, where have you been? Like, dude, you missed 45 minutes of class. And if they're like, oh, I was so-and-so, my mom called the office, I'm like, awesome. If they're like, yeah, I was just dicking around here and I finally got in. Well, okay. So then I emailed the office and I'm like, so-and-so just walked in. But it's like, it's a drag when it happens two or three times every morning because I can't wait till 11 a.m. to do attendance because then I'll hear about it. And actually, there's been some back and forth. There's been conflict over that. Teachers have said to admin, can you just tell us what you want? Because some of us are waiting until 10:30. Some of us are doing it right at the beginning of the day. Like, what do you want? And that is a leadership thing. That's a leadership thing. You need to then talk to admin assistants, figure out how it works in the office. See, this is where I'm open and aware. I'm open and aware, baby. Tell me how it works. School me. How does it work in the office? And then listen to me when I tell you how it works in my classroom. And let's find a middle ground so we can work together and make sure kids are safe. But I'm not dying every 5 seconds emailing you and you're not calling parents and saying, your kid's missing. It is standard practice. You know how many times when I'm in the school building, the phone rings at 10 to 10 or maybe 10 after 10. Hey, it's Mr. C. Hey, it's the office. Is Joe Blow in class? No. Are you sure? I'm like, hold on. And I literally do this. No. Are you sure? Joe Blow, are you here? And I'm not even being funny. Is Joe Blow here? Everybody's like, no, Mr. C, you already did attendance. Joe Blow's not here. He's not here. Because it's that, oh my God, the parents say he's there. And you're telling me he's not there. And I'm going to check with you three times because God forbid a parent be wrong or something. It's easier for the teacher to be wrong than the parent to be wrong. So I'm like, no, I don't think you're hearing me. He's not here. I didn't mess up the attendance today. He's not here. And then it's like, oh, shoot. And even then I'm like worried. I'm like, whoa, the parent at home doesn't know where their kid is and their kid is not here in my classroom. That's a problem in grade three, right? Like,
yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I see, that's a what word? What do we call
that's our fossil? That's a fossil word. Yeah, I get full of shit idiom list. Yeah.
But I'm telling you, as teacher, there needs to be a line. And it's not my job to force the parents to toe the line. It's not my job. They're going to do what they want, but there's consequences. So if you're going to let your kid sit on the toilet for an extra hour for whatever reason, you're not going to notify the school or they're not going to communicate with somebody, I'm marking them absent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a phone call home and that's going to cause problems. But my response to that is, well, I can't wait all day to do attendance. So it's like, just tell me who we're going to upset. Am I supposed to upset my admin assistant or am I supposed to upset the parents? Like, that's what it comes down to. Somebody's going to be upset.
Yeah, I'm kind of okay with the upset. I don't worry too much about the upset.
But that's fair for you, Clough. But if your principal gives you shit because your attendance is late every day because mm-hmm. you're waiting for Joe Blow to get in, you're mm-hmm. probably going to stop waiting for Joe Blow unless you really don't care about your principal giving you heck.
Well, or...
Because I'm not interested in hearing from my principal or even worse, my admin assistant reaming in my ear. I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm. I think the track I loved you were on there is sort of trying to figure out what the actual conversation that's happening here. So
with who?
Exactly. Because part of it is it's so hard to track what this one data point can do to people, right? Like I have regularly received emails from our attendance person saying, hey, are you going to send in your attendance? And I could be like, we have a line, you know, we're supposed to have it in within the first 15 minutes of class. We have to have it in. So of the period, there are times where that line does not mesh with what's going on in the classroom. And it's not because of pedagogy. It's because of life and stuff that goes on. And then there's the human element of like, I might forget because I go off track from my patterning and then I go rabbit hole. And then all of a sudden it's 20 minutes and I'm getting an email. Or the other one, I do the wrong attendance. I miss a kid. Mm-hmm. So this is now where I'm face to face. This has happened face to face. So I do the wrong attendance. So this was face to face, in our adaptive learning model that we were doing last semester and earlier this semester. I send in the wrong attendance. I hit click, point and click the wrong thing. And then two kids in the class, their cell phones start ringing. And they say, it's my parents wondering where I am. And they want to talk to you. So one parent I talked to right in class, kid handed me their mobile phone. I'm like, yeah, I made a mistake. I'm fixing it right now. The other one, I didn't have time because I was talking to the other parent. So I like, I can't, I'm not going to talk to two. I said, tell your parents I'm sending out, there's an email I'm sending right now that I made a mistake. And then I sent the email. So here's the extra steps. In my attendance record, the program that we use is called Teach Assist. I can amend it after I've sent it in, but it's only my record. So then I have to send a correction to the attendance administrator. And then I double down and I send an email, BCC both those parents and say, my apologies, your child is in class. If you need further clarification, we can talk on lunch or after school, but I do, your child is in class right now. And that happens, I would say that happens often you know, where I make a mistake or something happens and the kid walks in late, or the kid, the exact same steps could happen if the kid walks in late and I've just sent the attendants, and as they're walking in, their phone goes off and the parent's like, where are you? You're supposed to be in class. And the kid said, I am in class. And then I'm standing there like, yeah, but you just walked into class. And it's the whole sort of thing all over again. But this, the attendance in itself, I think is a good example of, it's a formal procedure, formal protocol. We have to do attendance. We are required to track attendance. Yet this year, the attendance data that we're generating is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Like in our board, we have a procedure that after X number of absences within a class, you either kind of put on sort of like prolonged absence, like you get put on a list, or you're pulled from that course. Like you're actually pulled, you technically would be unregistered for that course. So you would lose a course. But because of the fragmentation of attendance this year, like that data stream leading to an outcome is completely compromised. It's completely compromised. So there's no rational way to sort of say if a kid has missed X number of classes that they are officially on that list anymore. So again, what conversation are we in? I think attendance feeds into just a rabbit hole of conversations. So keep on calling, right? And I get you're saying you don't want to be in conflict with any of those parties.
It's different in an elementary school too. You see these parties all day long. This goes back to my notion that I talked to you the other day about high school and how you could literally, high school teachers never need to be in the office. Elementary school teachers are in the office all day long.
Why is that?
Because that's where the mailboxes are. That's where admin is. Elementary teachers tend to see their admin and have to deal with their admin a lot more than I would say a general high school experience. Based on what I've been told and what I see, mm-hmm. It's like the hub of the building in a way for teachers. Depending on your school layout, the office is like, you cannot avoid the office. It's very difficult because of the small nature of the building and the way it works in elementary. In secondary, there's like 100 secretaries. They all do something different. This is just the vibe that I've gotten over the years. Even when I worked in high school, there's no reason for you to to be in the office. You can talk to your department head. You can make a call. My thing is, it's a thing for me. So they've told us by this time. So I do it by that time. And if I can contact the office after that time, if a kid walks in, then I do it. Mm-hmm. And if I can't, then I can't. And then there people will be pissed. But for me, it's important at the end of the day to say, hey, I followed your procedure and it didn't work this time. You know, it's hilarious on days where I get, because I'm being paid back planning time because I missed so much planning time when we were in the building, mm-hmm. that they'll give it to me at 9:45 in the morning. So school starts at 9:15 and they can give me my missed planning time from 9:45 to 10:25. That scares me because if I'm missing three kids, I wouldn't normally do attendance until about 9:45, 9:50. And then, because then I've given them enough time to get in from whatever they're doing. But I need to be done my attendance before 9:45 because I'm leaving. And then if they walk into that class after, then that's totally gong show because it's not my class anymore. I'm on planning time. I'm not nowhere near them. They're with another teacher and the other teacher doesn't know. Jimmy could walk in because here's the other thing. Jimmy could walk in at 10 because we know with the way this whole Wi-Fi thing works, kids might have a bad connection. So they'll leave the meet, restart their computer, come back in. That happens all day long. So then it's gong show because then it's like I mark Jimmy absent, but Jimmy walks in at 10, and then the admin assistant's calling at 10:45 saying Jimmy's not here. And then I get an email, is Jimmy there? And I'm like, yeah, Jimmy's here. What time did Jimmy come? I don't know. After recess, Jimmy appeared. I can't be calling the office all day every time a kid walks in.
Mm-hmm. Walks in or out. Right?
I do my attendance for what I've got. And if a kid walks in shortly after that time, then I'll email the office, say so-and-so's here now. They weren't here for the first hour of the day. So it gets... And then the planning time teacher will tell you that it's not her job. She's like, I don't know who's here and who's not. I'm doing your planning time. You told me what to teach. I'm teaching it. There's just a lot of murky waters. And I think as a parent, when I get the call, I talk to my children. I say, listen, this is not acceptable. So it's happened to Ben a couple of times. And the couple of times it's happened, we've been here with him. So we're like, okay, something happened because he's in class. We can hear it and we can see it. So I'm like, don't worry about it, Ben. Like, I think I've emailed a couple times, said no, there's a mistake somewhere because I could actually physically see my son in the classroom listening to the teacher. Now, whether he didn't turn on his mic or not in time, that's a whole other thing. We talked to him about it, but he was present. He was there. So let's just move on. I know where he was. But if I get one of those during the school day, then you better believe I'm going to be all over my son's rear end to find out where he was, why I got that call, and how it's not going to happen again.
The meaning of attendance this year is just so...
Oh, the whole thing's whacked.
Yeah, it's really whacked. What does attendance mean?
It's whacked. Everything's whacked. But guess what?
What?
Nothing's changed for you or I. We still have the same expectations on us. Nothing's changed. The world has changed. The pandemic has shifted everything. But you and I are still writing report cards the way they've always been traditionally written.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's come off our plate. I mean, extracurriculars have. In some way, and I know admin have shifted the way that they operate. Things that they would normally do with us isn't really happening the same way, and I appreciate that. But above admin, above us, there's no change in expectation because of the global pandemic. I still have to write the report card the way I've been trained to write the report card in all its glory. And it's going to take me the same amount of time to write them as it always does. And yet you and I just spent, 20 minutes talking about the nonsense of attendance and the conflicts that can arise from something like that. And trust me, dude, there have been times where the secretary calls and I'm like, oh, shoot, Jimmy is here. I'm so sorry, and then it's like, at first recess, I'm writing an apology card with like a lollipop stuck to it. And I'm like, kid, take this to the office, because I understand how difficult that phone call can be. Hey, it's the school. Jimmy's not in class. And the parent's heart stops. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh my God, I'm at work. I dropped him off at the bus. What happened to Jimmy? Right? Like, I get that. That's like, imagine me at work. The phone rings and they're like, hey, it's your son's school on the phone. They don't know where he is. Dude, like I want to jump out the window, get in my car and go find my kid. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do my best to minimize those. They still happen. It's crazy how it happens, actually. It's like, oh my God, Jimmy's right there. How did I mark Jimmy absent?
I need to ask my mom what that was like for her. Maybe she'll listen today. But I don't know. I don't remember if I was... I don't even remember what the process was when I was going through high school. Like, I have no clue. I'm imagining, like, there was none of the digital technology. So you'd have to phone one by one by one by one. Like, maybe that's the exact, that's sort of like, there was that's no notification. right. But there was no, so you have no automatic notification system whatsoever.
Not at my elementary school. At my son's elementary school.
But they obviously exist because in my board, they are. It's a digital voice that contacts you. So at least with that being said, I know for sure, like, that definitely was not the case back in 1985. There was no digital robo voices calling home. So whatever your high school, you know, if someone doesn't show up for class and attendance is taken every class, I wonder if there was, they were that quick to call home. Because I remember within my career, when we were in the classroom, one of the duties for OSSTF members on your hall duty was picking up the attendance. We would walk room to room, and everybody had like a folder stuck just outside their door, and you would walk by and collect the attendance. Now, depending on what your, and I used to love trying to figure out more efficient and faster ways to kind of get attendance and to make sure I didn't miss a classroom. Like, I was always trying to figure out the efficiency of, should I go up the stairwell first? And do I have to double back and go back to room 206? Like, I was tracking it because I took it like a game, right? I'm like trying to make sure I get every single little piece of fruit that sort of pops up on the game board. And it's funny because I don't think our care of children is any different from then to now, but I'm imagining every school, that's how attendance was done. It was picked up. It wasn't digital. So that lag time of getting the paperwork down to the office to make the call that your child is not there, it's just fascinating to think that, you know, that lag time could be up to 45 minutes into the period or the start of the day. And yet now, like, I got that phone call, I got that robo phone call within the first 10 minutes of class. Like, as soon as it gets posted into the system, for us, I'm imagining as soon as the teacher digitally takes it, there's a pathway directly from the teacher's software to the master software to the digital voice, and it's instantaneous. So yeah, it's just really fascinating to think about that we didn't care any less about the kids and where the kids were in the past. But when we went for 100 years of education, the attendance was walked down to the office. And then it's only in the last 7 years that all of a sudden that data point travels at light speed and causes some of these issues, some of these hiccups.
It's not been too long. Oh my goodness, maybe like, we've not had the computer attendance.
It sounds like you don't even have the full version of it. You've got the trial version. If it's not calling home, they didn't.
Yeah. Well, but I remember the paper pencil attendance.
Yeah.
Like, I've only been doing digital attendance for, oh my God, this year and last year maybe. And then before that it was paper, and it was, you know, every school's different. So if they don't, at some schools, they have a group of kids that need to move all the time. So those kids usually with an educational assistant are walking up and down the halls, collecting attendance, delivering to the office. And then after
work experience,
after lunch, they're delivering them to the teachers' classes, whatever. Yeah. Then there's the, hey, Jimmy and Jane, take the attendance down to the office. And it's like a nod. It's like, you get to do it today. And they're like, it's like, they won the Super Bowl, right? They get to take the attendance to the office.
In high school, it was very similar to the look. It's a similar look. So here's the look, and it could be attendance. So the current version is like you see the kid like this looking down. So they're looking down at their desk, and all of a sudden they're like, "Sir, can I go to the bathroom?" And it's because of whatever message they just got.
Right, right.
The previous version of that would be you're finishing the attendance and you're looking up, and then someone at the back is like, "Sir, can I take the attendance down?" And you're like, "Yeah, you're meeting up with someone." Like, it's not, the attendance in that case is like, it has nothing to do with your goodwill. Well, it's like 95% goodwill, 5%, I got to meet my significant other in the stairwell. So...
Oh man, this is crazy that we even ended up on attendance, but.
I want to next week, I want to kind of dig into, and I'm watching for this on my socials. And this is just, it's not homework, but I don't want to dig into it right now. So prior to where I'm at right now. So when I was in Alt Ed, I was in a lot of conversations around how do we sort of do kind of borderless classrooms. So it's a little bit like I know this is a big pivot, but I want to cloud seed this one. Intracurricular classrooms is a really fascinating. It's always been fascinating to me. As in, you know, when we're co-teaching, you and I touched on this. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you did a blog post about this, but we had a conversation. I don't know. It was either in year one, maybe year two, maybe year three. It definitely wasn't this year of the podcast. But we were talking about using whole school learning. And I think it started with a conversation around me dropping the idea that makerspaces should not be locked up in the library, that it would be really cool to have whole school makerspaces. So anywhere in the hallway could be a makerspace activity. And then I think you and I kind of got into it about the logistics of actually having kids learning in the hallway. I think you had some activity that you talked about where you were just outside the library, sort of using that space. And what does it mean to be to not interfere with somebody else's class, even was sort of like a mindset that somehow learning in the hallway gets in the way of learning. So we dance with that a little bit. And it's just as we next year are sort of thinking about how to work with hybrid teaching, whatever that might be for every board, if that's what, you know, if your board votes for it or doesn't vote for it, my board is still thinking about it. Likely we're still going to move ahead with the hybrid teaching, as in simulcasting to some students at home and some students in the classroom. They're also considering whether or not we're going to have quadmesters. So there's lots of little pieces in there. I'm coming back to thinking about classes without walls, borderless learning, and interdisciplinary opportunities. So what opportunities can we start to light up where we co-teach classes? And maybe share the load. So if we're thinking about team teaching, and there's a logistical scheduling issue with this, but you can have co-teaching things assigned. Is there any way that we can start blending curriculum in a way that is kind of helpful for the students? So one crossover that I'm thinking about in particular is, you know, some of the writing pieces that we do within a careers or a civics class, what do those writing forms look like in an English class? And is there a way to sort of collaborate and have students be able to move back and forth between those spaces? So the further we go into digital learning where the actual site is not as important as it used to be, I just wonder with our adaptive learning, if anyone out there is sort of doing some interesting things with interdisciplinary or co-teaching classes where, you know, teachers maybe are trading out or students are able to move back and forth between classes. We almost got to that space when when we had one staff room conversation around how the administrators are virtual schooling is being dissolved as an independent school. So in my board, we had a virtual high school. So if you were doing pure virtual, you're actually in a different school. You're still sort of you were still connected with your home school, but you actually, the teachers in the virtual school were hired specifically just to do virtual school, even though there were virtual elements in your actual high school. All of that staff and all of that admin are coming back to their home schools next year. They're dissolving the virtual school, and then virtual learning is going to be offered directly out of each high school. So I asked in one of our staff meetings, I said, will a student be able to then enroll? So what happens now is that everyone will get different section allocations for their schools. Section allocations start to, like, you have section allocations, you have students' course choices, and then you have teachers being staffed into the schedule. And all of these things are in flux right up into the last minute in June. And typically they, not typically, but they can still be in flux even coming into September. So we really don't know what the master schedule is going to look like. So I asked the question, okay, if there's a kid at Roland High that for whatever reason, they can't get their grade 12 visual arts course, but that grade 12 visual arts course is being offered in the same period at Clough High, can the kid enroll at Clough High but stay a student, like it'd be a shared student between the two? And I think this is one of those spaces that we really haven't figured out well, because it strikes me like that would be great. It goes all the way back, like this idea was in my head from, damn. So I started teaching in 2005. In 2006, I think I told you I was in guidance that year. I think it was that year. No, third year teaching, I was in guidance. And we actually had a student that in the morning, we was in the morning, the afternoon, they walked over to the sister high school, which was about a 20-minute walk away, and they were taking like something there, and then they would walk back and come to our high school, and they took their auto shop in the afternoon. So it's that idea of using your school board as a campus as opposed to singular schools. There's a whole bunch of stuff about staffing and union logistics. There's a whole bunch of stuff that comes out of this, but I like it because it starts to pull apart. It pulls apart opportunity, even in the headaches of hybrid learning and sort of like the digital learning. It's what I'm now looking for myself. Hybrid will be a challenge. It'll be a challenge for other people, but much like this time last year, when everyone was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do adaptive learning? So, you know, the school year 2020/21, I want to start to get into some conversations about how am I going to get to functional with hybrid learning? I want to get to functional. I'd like to go higher than functional, but I want to get to functional where, and I said this to my department head just the other day, I said, whenever you get the sense like the department is ready to start collaborating, creating for something for September, I said, I'm down. I said, I'll lead it, whatever you want. I'm happy to have this conversation where we start to look at how can we support each other to build an amazing system for the students in September. I said, because we can't wait to September to see what the students need. We need to have some pieces in place ahead of time. Not homework, but this is what I'm watching for in my socials and my PLN right now, looking for people that are kind of pushing that space.
Oh, it's the button. It's the button.
Mm-hmm.
The unraveling.
It's a good one. So now we have to remember next week to jump on what you were just talking about.
I'll use the Decoded podcast and I'll put it out there too. And it's not as simple as saying, I mean, there's, and even myself, the whole In September volume 2. Like I've had people reach out and say, Clough, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling in public. I kind of hit the space last year and pushed out a whole slew of things of like what September will look like. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? I'm having some more feels. So I'm going to put that out there. I know for some people it might be triggering. I know for some people some people are saying, well, Clough, yeah, like you're just finding ways to say things that I'm thinking. So that's cool too. But it's also entering into sort of a discussion, and that's, you know, I'm bugged and hurt and bothered about where I have to go next. But I also feel like I can't hang on to the system that I'm in right now at the cost of not knowing what the next system's going to be. So I'm going to emote. I'm going to think. I'm going to sort of push out some poems. I'm going to have some conversations. And somewhere I'm going to find kind of like that through line for whatever my practice is going to be for September. I feel it's okay to sort of argue and complain if you're moving in the direction of learning. So that's what I want to have. I want to try to find some spaces to, and I'm not talking hopeful. I'm talking tactical, strategic. How do we sort of get some, what do we need in place in order to feel like we can arrive in September with a toolkit that says, okay, we know what we're going to do, and to practice it, test drive it. That's my thoughts.
The Decoded Podcast, season 4, episode 36.
Damn. You know, it's pretty whack. We're coming up to the end of season four, eh? Before we hit summer school. Right? There's like, what, five more episodes before we hit summer school?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's what it is. Crazy, yeah. Eh?
It is. It's cool, though. I like this as a body of work. I recommend it highly.
Did you hear that, Aldo?
Get up in that reflective practice.
Right on. Well, have a good one, Clough.
You too, man. I'm sure we'll chat later.
Yeah. Peace.
See you on the battle bus.
Yeah, see you on the battle bus. Hashtag Geezer Gaming.
Geezer Gaming, yeah.